Hello, it's good to be with you. Before we sort of dive into our own exploration this morning, I want to pause to acknowledge that we gather on Treaty One land. And that statement, of course, reflects many things. One of them is that exploration is something we should engage with humility. When we arrive at what is new or unknown to us with hubris as our attitude, with unwarranted entitlement or arrogance, which we will probably perceive as warranted, but in any case, when we arrive with that as the first wave of what we bring, exploration can go very wrong. And do a great deal of harm. And so, being a community of exploration, I think there is, among many other things, a bit of a signal for us in our land acknowledgement that exploration is something to be done in a spirit of humility, a spirit of reception, not aggression, of learning first rather than teaching first. It's an interesting space for me to engage. Given my role in our community, and so the reminder, as always, is as much for me as for anybody else. So, in that spirit, in a spirit of humble acknowledgement of the complexity of the welcome, I gratefully acknowledge that we gather on Treaty One land this day and every day. Let's take a few moments to breathe together, and I would like us to interlock our hands this morning, as part of that practice, if you're joining us for that. And as always, a reminder that no one needs to do this. It's not a passcode. It's not a way to get in to something. In terms of either or, but it is an invitation to be open to something. I think that stillness and openness are always important, and I think they're never more important than when we feel like the fire hose of information is on full blast. And of course, Ray touched on it, Zach thoughtfully engaged with it. Had a long chat with my friend Steve Bell this week, part of which was about this. No, Ray, I didn't catch him this morning, but I feel like I'm pretty current in my conversation with him. And one of the things that him and I talked about a fair bit was the importance of being open to mystery when we are confronted with things that confound or confuse or distress or any of those kind of emotions of uncertainty. And it might seem like a passive thing to do, to be still in the face of those kinds of things. But it and it can be a passive thing, but it can also be a very active, chosen way of engaging with things that do not have, let's just say, dead obvious solutions, where the path forward is not universally understood or clear, maybe even personally understood or clear, and that there is a place for humble openness in the face of the confounding. Steve was talking about his own practices of prayer in particular, when we chatted, and he said something interesting. He said, like, the attitude of openness, which we could call prayer, we can call it by other things as well, of course. He called it prayer, is important, but so is the posture, so is what we do with our body. And for him, he said, when I'm confronted with things like the events south of the border this past week or other occasions, he said, and I want to be open to mystery in them, to be open to the divine in them, said, I need to kneel. I need to do something more with my body than just going for a walk or just sitting on the couch and being open. I need to change my posture. And I realize that depending on our own histories, that the idea of kneeling to pray may or may not be a resonant one. But I think the linkage is an important one, that we open our minds and our spirits and our lives in part by things we choose to do with our bodies that are about being receptive, that are about being humble and open to what we don't know. I think that message is, well, I was going to say universal, which doesn't mean everyone accepts it, of course, but I think it's found everywhere in every thoughtful engagement with the things we don't know. So we're going to breathe. And if you choose, and along with that, I would invite you to just put your hands together and just let them rest together. If you're seated, you can let them rest in your lap. I'm holding them up here so we can sort of see what I'm talking about. But let them rest wherever they are at rest. And along with being aware of breath and how it feels going in through our noses and being cradled in our bodies and going out through our mouths, I would encourage you to consider the sensation of being interlocked, of things that are normally separate, choosing to touch one another and be interdependent with one another. We'll get to more of those things as we go this morning, but let's start there. So five rounds of square breathing this morning. So in through our noses till we're filled right up. For me, that's a count of three. Cradle your breath, I would say, for the same amount of time, or something that feels symmetrical there can sort of help us to rest. The symmetry is restful. And then out till we're empty. And then, so five times of that. And then we will go on with our exploration. All right? Okay. For those who choose, let's breathe together. Here we go. Peace, everyone. Thank you. I count it among the great privileges of my week to be able to breathe together with people in this community. Want to also note a real heartfelt thanks to Judy for last week's conversation. Judy, thanks for tucking that into the little window in your schedule. Those slightly less full days between a full-on work schedule as well as your ongoing studies and your Christmas break. I appreciate you being willing to do that. And as I revisited that conversation to edit it and post it this past week, I was reminded of several things that felt really practical and worthwhile, really helpful. And I know I got a couple of messages from people not here in the city as well who joined us only by podcast, who heard the podcast version and found it very helpful with particular situations in their lives. And so thank you. Really appreciate your contribution to that. That sort of had a bit of a New Year's-y theme in a very general sense, but I wanted to explore something this week that felt more like a bit of a deliberate tone setter for 2021, something that touched on another one of the big themes that I feel like we can all observe unfolding around us, sort of more about that as we go. But I want to start with a bit of a story. This is from a friend of mine, Tim Huff, a longtime street worker in Toronto and advocate for everyone on the margins, but a particular love for people in the street. For about the past 24 years or so, Tim has been doing what he calls a backyard Santa gig, where he sort of dresses up like Santa after dark, and he goes to different homes, backyards of people whose homes he has some kind of connection with, and leaves gifts, and then sort of scampers away. Doesn't go in the house, doesn't kind of connect. It's sort of this little ghosty Santa thing. And it's quite important to him. Like I said, a long time practice of his, and now, of course, you know, sort of the only kind of Santa-ing that he could do was kind of to not stop in, but just zoom through these backyards. And he's been wearing this homemade Santa costume all these years, and it's wearing out. And so he started wearing red long johns under it so that he wouldn't have a wardrobe malfunction. In his words, important stuff to try to make happy memories that will last rather than awkward memories people wish they could forget. All to say, he finally broke down and decided it was time to buy an actual Santa suit. And so he went down town in Toronto to Malabar's Custom Theater and Costume Shop, and to buy himself a Santa suit. And this was in December, and this is what happened on his way back to his truck, in his words. While walking back to my truck, I stopped to talk to an old homeless man sitting among his soiled belongings by a traffic light on Queen Street, keeping socially distanced, of course, which is an unthinkable and painful new reality for any old-school street worker. Oh, he was heartbreaking and adorable. The kind of homeless person you'd see portrayed on a really syrupy Hallmark Christmas movie without the inevitable happy ending, I fear. With no upper or lower teeth, he kind of reminded me of a Muppet when he spoke. Bracket, yes, these are the kind of things only long-time street worker veterans feel lovingly comfortable to say aloud. Close bracket. While we were chatting, he noticed a patch of red velvet and white faux fur peeking out from the hanger hole in the suit bag I was carrying over my shoulder. He tilted his head and pointed towards the swatch of Santa suit and asked sweetly, "Are you my secret Santa?" Oh, how my heart is stirred by ancient survivors who have held on to their great wit despite their suffering and all the injustice they have known. "Maybe so," I giggled back. "What would you like?" I asked an old man who pretty much needed every single thing most of us take for granted every single day of our lives. "Well, I'm past needing just my two front teeth," he snickered, pulling at the sides of his mouth to show nothing but gums. Then he pulled two sets of dentures out of his coat pocket and held them up towards me. "These don't fit no more. Hurts too much," he winced. I bought him some soup, and we had the loveliest little visit I've had all crazy COVID year. "People are lonely, Santa," he told me between slurps. He kept calling me Santa, and I kept liking that he did. "Are you lonely?" I asked. And he did what street angels always do. He made small, simple sentences profound. A gift, I am convinced, only made possible by endless days existing solely in the moment while watching people pass you by with no regard for your thoughtful and tender soul. He said, "I'm okay. I'm used to this. But I hear all the conversations at them red lights, and in all my years, I've never heard people as hurt and lonely as now." Yeah. Tim goes on to talk about how in survey after survey throughout the last several years, long before COVID, in his words, mugged the world of its would-be normal, the number one fear of adults is loneliness. And then he gets really practical. He talks about handwriting cards and connecting in other ways, a whole bunch of things that most of us can do safely and inexpensively and purposefully. In the blurb this week, I talked a little bit about trajectory setting, about how choices we make lean in discernible directions. And today, I want to explore just a bit further how much one of our most basic human interactions matters, and that is the way that we greet one another. A couple of weeks ago, I needed to make a call about a warranty repair on an appliance. I looked up the company's information, and there was a pair of service numbers. There was an American service number, and there was a Canadian service number. So I called the designated number for Canada, and I got a person who answered the phone with a cheerful, "Hi, you've reached Whirlpool Canada, Tamara speaking." and I said in my, you know, accent-free mid-Canadian English, "Hello, Tamara, you sound like you might be from the southern part of Canada." And she laughed, and we kind of had this lovely little chat about how she was working from home these days in Virginia, where they had just had an unprecedented 5 inches of snow, which she said would be gone by the next day. And I shared with her the fact that as we spoke, it was snowing here in Winnipeg and our snow wouldn't be gone until April. And she said, "I'll pray for y'all." We eventually took care of the business that I was calling about, but I hung up smiling, and I expect from the sound of her voice that she did as well. I was really pleased to be helped with my concerns, of course. I mean, I was calling for a reason, but I'm not telling you a story about what's wrong with my oven, am I? I'm telling you a story about a human-to-human connection. That's what made the moment memorable for me. That's why I'll retell that story. And that's what makes that story still resonate in my life with a positive, life-giving, affirming energy. And that all started with a greeting. Hi. How we greet one another matters. It's important as we explore this, I think, to not confuse ordinary with unimportant, or simple with not profound, you know? I was reading an article by a university prof this past week, and in that article they told a story about going through their year-end evaluations, the ones that are contributed by students, and coming across this remark from a student. Thank you for the way you taught this course. In the moments before each class started, you walked around and talked to us, chatting about the course, asking about our weekend, or just joking around. And what I appreciated the most is that you did this with everyone in the room, not just the students you already knew, the ones who sat up front, or those who looked like you do, but everyone. Thanks for that. And in this article, the prof went on to say that while the comment initially felt affirming, it felt good. It also felt sobering. It felt like, in their words, damning with faint praise, because it pointed to the fact that although simple things like smiling or saying hello or just sort of making some small talk had had a significant positive impact on that student, that wasn't necessarily something that they were experiencing in all of their classes. And honestly, sometimes it's easier to not connect than it is to connect, right? Even in simple things like saying hello. And there are ways in which I think that's especially true these days, under these circumstances. If we thought we were distracted before COVID, oh, now we are juggling whatever was calling for our attention before, plus trying to navigate a world where the social rules are constantly shifting, where we can't fully see one another's faces, which is a very important aspect of how we process social signals, and in which public figures, also under considerable duress, are not necessarily offering us shining examples of, you know, how to reach for the higher relational or moral standards in our human-to-human interactions. So when you line it up like that, we could be forgiven for forgetting to say a kind hello to one another. Having said that, maybe in light of those sorts of things, we would benefit from a few moments of considering how much that hello matters. Now, some of it's obvious, right? When somebody greets us in a friendly manner, if we sense genuineness in that greeting, that feels good. We get a little squirt. We actually get a little biological boost. We get a little squirt of happy juice. We get a little squirt of this is a safe place chemicals. And those things help our body and our brain to know that we can dial it down. We can lower our guard. We can lean in a bit instead of leaning away or trying to make our departure. We can positively predispose ourselves for the next few moments of our existence. It's interesting that a phrase like letting our guard down remains a common idiom, even though literally being guarded is not something most of us know anything about. In a world that feels uncertain and sometimes subsequently threatening, these kinds of things actually really matter. And one of the powerful ways we send those kind of you're safe here signals is by smiling. And the research on this is pretty clear. I know I pay attention to this stuff when I bump into it, partly because I feel like I need the antidote for my own face on this, because this furrow right here, that's my ground zero for my face. That tends to be my standard approach to the world. It's not necessarily smiling. But the research about the power of smiling is pretty, you know, overwhelmingly tilted in one direction. Smiling is clearly contagious. If we smile, other people tend to smile. Employees who smile more tend to have more satisfied customers. I don't think very many people probably hang up from a phone call with Tamara without at least some kind of a little lift from that just the buoyancy of that ha coming at them. This study, when I bumped into this one felt especially fascinating. There's a study out there that shows that if you hold a pencil in your teeth like this, I'll take it out to make the point. But if you put it in there, it makes the corners of your mouth curl up a little bit. And if you do that, and then you encounter the same joke that you would without doing that, you find the joke funnier. Like this is what the study showed, which I think is pretty fascinating. And you enjoy whatever it is that you are doing just a little bit more. So it might not be a very hygienic thing to walk around with a pen in your mouth, but might make you happier. This conversation that I mentioned in the front end here about that I had with my friend Steve this week, we were talking about that relationship between our bodies and our spirits, and he told the story about he was in a funk at some point. He couldn't remember about what, but he was just down and he couldn't seem to crack it. And his wife Nancy, who can be quite a funny person, has a very wry sense of humor, said, "Steve, go like this. Like just, like interlock your arms and rock them like you're swing them back and forth like you're rocking a baby." Does it for a few minutes, and she's like, "You happy now?" And he's like, "I was." He said, "It's hard to stay not happy when you're just doing that for no reason." There is a relationship between these things that we choose to do or do with our bodies and the way we feel. Now, all that stuff about smiling—that's nice to know. But these days, it's a little bit complicated, right? I don't know about you, but pretty much any of the masks, the literal masks that I've had to wear for, the last however many months, they're more than adequate to cover up my smile. That said, I have met a few people over the course of the pandemic who seem to be able to transcend that limitation. They beam at you. Not like in the aliens with laser sense, but in the sense of being able to just transmit joy and welcome from their eyes. And I find that fascinating. In the early days of my work as a photographer, I can remember thinking a fair bit about how to help people smile without looking like they, had painful gas or something. Is that too much information? I can recall reading an article about, not about the gas part, but about how our eyes change when we smile, and how some photo models in particular actually cover the lower part of their faces to practice this so that their whole face can convey a feeling, a positive feeling, not just their mouth. I mean, true confession, when I read that article, I tried it. Like I was like, "Huh, can you actually do that? Can the smile make it to your eyes? And if the eyes are the window of the soul, I want my smile to make it to my eyes." I'm not saying I'm a stellar example of this. In fact, I think I'm probably a rather poor one, but guess what? We can learn to smile above our masks if we want to. At least we can make progress in that direction. But here's another thing. Even with our masks in place, we can say hello. And just taking the time to acknowledge someone as a person can set in motion many of those same good feelings that are brought about by a smile. All that navigating of the constantly changing world that I talked about a few minutes ago, it's actually so common that that psychologists have given it a technical name. It produces something in us that they call stimulus overload. It's kind of nice when you encounter a technical term that's dead obvious, isn't it? Like that one. What we do is we try to conserve energy to allow ourselves to focus more on whatever we perceive to be the task at hand. And the way that we do that is we put on perceptual blinders. We put in place in our sort of incoming filters things that block out the things that we don't choose to understand to be relevant to whatever we are trying to focus on. So we do things with our bodies, like keeping our heads down. We pop in our earbuds, and oh my goodness, true wireless earbuds have made this just a sort of a shot in the dark thing. Almost, it's hard to see those little guys, right? But when we do see them, we get the message: don't talk to me. We lean forward when we walk. We scroll through our phones. We send a million little signals that say, "I am not available to interact or connect with you as a human being right now." Now, we might think of ourselves as warm, friendly, caring people. I don't think most of us want to think of ourselves as, unfriendly, sort of objectively distancing nasty folks. We prefer to perceive ourselves the other way. And that can be true, that thinking of ourselves as warm and friendly and caring, that can be true about our self-perception, whether we also perceive ourselves to be, way over on the extrovert or way over on the introvert continuum or anywhere sort of in the middle. We still want to think of ourselves in those positive terms. But here's the thing. When we put on our perceptual blinders to deal with stimulus overload, which we sometimes really do feel the need to do, we send messages to the people around us. And those messages play right into the insecurities of people. Just like when somebody sends those messages to us, they play into our insecurities. Those messages send signals that suggest that the other person would be right to wonder about their place in society, that they would be right to wonder about their intellectual capacity, whether they're as smart as you or me. They would be right to wonder about whether they're going to be received and accepted without judgment. They would be right to wonder about their worthiness to be loved. And we don't tend to think about all of that when we put on our perceptual blinders, but that's part of what goes on when we do that. Those messages we send do not say, in this uncertain world, you are about to interact with someone you can trust to do their best in this moment, to be accepting and to be kind. They do not send that message. But our self-perception might really want to send that message. We might really want people to experience us that way. Most of us, most of the time, want to be that warm, caring person. Now, how does what we believe, which is what we're exploring, impact all of this? Well, as with many human dilemmas, there's a profound linkage between what we believe and how we greet one another. Jesus, that insightful into human nature rabbi, knew about this. And as we have his words in Matthew, he made this salient observation about it. And if you greet only your own people, what are you doing more than others? Do not even pagans do that? Oh, man. Anyway, in other words, how we greet others says something important about how we regard them. There's a whole little seminar on tribalism in those two sentences, right? Or if we wanted to put it another way, it's worth examining whatever we say we believe through this lens of how we greet one another, because if what we say we believe can't even positively impact the way we say hello, then whatever that belief is, it really might not be worthy of our trust and our practice. If it can't even reach that layer of our lives, that very ordinary, everyday layer of our lives. Now, we've touched on how it's gotten more complicated to do some of these things because of COVID, and I want to restate that because I think that's a legitimate challenge in all of this. But that's exactly why I think it's also gotten more important these days. And that happens sometimes, right? When things get harder, we need to kind of lean in a little more. More than ever, we are hurt and lonely, as that homeless guy observed to Tim. We're more hurt and lonely. We are more starving for human-to-human connection than we've ever been, perhaps. More than ever, we need to think about why how we greet one another actually matters, and we need to do what we can to sort of up our hello game in whatever safe, creative ways we can. Well, let's take this to a little different layer just for a few moments. This is C.S. Lewis, whose thinking has been formative for me, although I've found over the years that as I've come to sort of recognize some of the background, philosophical background to his thought, I've found myself sort of launching from it rather than staying with it. And I'll talk about that in a moment as well. But I continue to be a great admirer of his ability to put beautiful words around big ideas. And this is from a sermon of Lewis's called The Weight of Glory, in which he talks about the linkage between what we believe and how we greet one another. He writes, "It's a serious thing to live in a society of possible gods and goddesses. To remember that the dullest and most uninteresting person you talk to may one day be a creature which, if you saw it now, you would be strongly tempted to worship, or else a horror and a corruption such as you now meet, if at all, only in a nightmare. All day long, we are, in some degree, helping each other to one or the other of these destinations. It is in light of these overwhelming possibilities, it is with the awe and circumspection proper to them, that we should conduct all our dealings with one another, all friendships, all loves, all play, all politics. There are no ordinary people. You have never talked to a mere mortal. Nations, cultures, arts, civilizations, these are mortal. And their life is to ours as the life of a gnat. But it is immortals whom we joke with, work with, marry, snub, and exploit, immortal horrors or everlasting splendors. Well, that's from a sermon. Hard to read C.S. Lewis's sermons and not feel a little bit inadequate if you ever deliver anything called a sermon. Brilliant, right? And yet there's things going on there. Let's want to explore this just a tiny bit. This idea, this thought that every human we meet bears what Lewis calls the weight of glory, of immortality, that is no less applicable for someone that we don't know or may even find ourselves afraid of or repulsed by than it is for our dearest friend. And even if we find Lewis's either-or ideas about where we're headed as humans a bit much to swallow, or if we get deeper into the, if you were to read the entire sermon, you would find reflected there his Neoplatonist ideas that all of this is sort of a shadow of the thing that's really real. Even if we don't find those ideas all that workable for ourselves, it's worth paying attention to them in the sense that they point toward a deeper consideration of what we do believe about the person we're interacting with. That kind of understanding of the human that is on the other side of our interaction raises compelling questions about what we believe about them. It raises questions like, do they have value? Do they have value apart from any value I assign to them? Do they have intrinsic value? Do they arrive in this situation with value? And if so, what sort of value? Is that a discernible thing? Can we talk about how valuable they are? And if they have value, if they have great value, Lewis says the value of gods and goddesses, of the immortal. If they have great value, why? What anchors that value? Do we have any thoughts about that? Do we have any beliefs about that? Is their value the same as our value? Is this person as valuable as I am? Are they as worthy of being treated well as I would like to think I am or believe I am? And if that is the case, if their value is the same as mine, how might that inform the way I interact with them? How might that change the way I do something as ordinary as saying hello? Anyone, Jesus observes, may offer the warmth of a "you matter" greeting to their friends, to the people in their tribe, to what the translation in Matthew calls your own people. But it takes deliberate effort, supported by some kind of considered understanding that every person I greet is an extraordinary being, perhaps an immortal being, a bearer of divinity. It takes some kind of deeper belief about the value of that person to compel me to greet the stranger or the alien to me, the one that I fear, the one that doesn't feel like they're inside my group. It takes a little more something to greet that person as though they have the same value in the world as the one that I love the most. The one that I would, without thinking about it perhaps, greet with warmth and trust and receptivity and the humble desire to be closer. In these coming days, in this day, as we greet a new year, I think it's worth considering making it our practice to also greet those that we meet in whatever ways we can think of and enact safely that point to their enormous value. To do so is, among other things, a kind of, I want to introduce a new metaphor here suddenly at the end, but to do something like that feels to me a little bit like sharing a vaccine for loneliness. You know, but it's one we already have. It's not one we have to wait for. We've got it now. Requires very little special care and handling, but it does need to be shared to be effective. Worth thinking about, at least for me, and I hope for all of us this morning. Peace to you all. Thanks for showing up. Thanks for listening. Thanks for being part of this community, whether it's in a near way or a far way. It's good to be together.